Hi there, this is Mike Quinn, Nine Numb from Return of the Jedi, The Force Awakens, and The Last Jedi. You're listening to Canned Air Podcast.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I'm Randy Hardenbrock.
And boy, do we have a special guest for you guys today. He's been the guest of honor at the San Diego Comic-Con three different times. He's done artwork for Star Wars Celebration, and George Lucas himself has bought this gentleman's artwork. He's won an Eisner Award in 1993 for his work on Alien Tribes, illustrated for Marvel, DC, Dark Horse. The list goes on. I could be here forever going on about this guy's career, but he's probably best known for his book, Star Wars, The Art of Dave Dorman. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome legendary artist Dave Dorman to the show. Dave, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Hey, it's my pleasure to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
I want to have some fun today. We're going to be talking about Star Wars in our retro roundtable. Just in general, Randy, there's no like a hard angle on that, right? Just Star Wars.
Just Star Wars. I figured it's about that time of the year, so.
Okay.
Yeah, Disney's really solidified the Christmas and Star Wars tie, haven't they?
Yes, they have.
Yeah, but there's nothing coming this year, though. I guess it's the off year, right? Last year was the last guy.
Well, I mean, we had the second season of The Mandalorian.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, we got Mandalorian, and certainly, you know, Marvel and the publishers are gearing up for this new Republic stuff. So that's going to be coming up really next year. So, you know, there's more Star Wars ahead, and from what they just promoted, you know, there's lots more coming.
Yeah, I'm excited. I cannot freaking wait. I mean, I'm not saying anything that no one else is already feeling here, though. It's going to be good content. But then, yeah, after we have that conversation, we're going to turn our conversation over to Dave and talk more about his career as an artist, how he got started, some amazing stuff in there. But before we do all that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And if you head over to Patreon or just go to our website, CannedAirPodcast.com, there's a link on there that'll take you to our Patreon page. And $5 a month gets you access to our Canned Air Patreon pod. It's a show we do once a month. You can only get there, and I think we're about to hit episode 40 over there. So that's a whole other catalog for you folks. And we have a lot more content coming down the pike on our Patreon page here in the next month or two. So that's something to look forward to. Gentlemen, what am I forgetting?
You're sitting around not doing much. Usually on a Tuesday night, tune into Facebook, Twitch, or YouTube and see Jack and I play some Jackbox games, hang out with some special guests, and just you even interact with us and possibly win some prizes.
Hey, nothing wrong with prizes. I'll take one of those.
Everybody likes prizes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's a t-shirt. You can win anybody with a t-shirt, especially me. I'm a fool for a t-shirt. I don't even care if I don't, you know, like what's actually on it. I'll take it.
Challenge accepted.
Let's kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
Good night, everybody.
All right, Star Wars. Randy, you want to kick us off?
Spoiler alert, but the last episode of Mandalorian, they dropped the Grand Master Thrawn.
Yeah.
Dropped his name, which has got me really excited because growing up, I used to read the book series that had him in it. I forget the title of that series, but
Thrawn, yeah. I think it was.
But anyway, it was just he was a really engaging character in the novels, and it's going to be really fun to see him portrayed in The Mandalorian.
I agree. Well, they haven't said who's going to be portraying him.
I saw a post the other day that was asking who should be it, and they gave a bunch of different people, and like one of them was what's his name that played Bond, Pierce Brosnan, which I was just like, no,
he's too old.
Yeah, one guy, Jason Isaacs, he was one of the Snape's dad from Harry Potter. That dude, yeah. I think he could pull it off easily.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I did one of the earliest versions of Thrawn, visual versions. I did a poster of the bad guys of the Empire for Star Wars Insider magazine, Center Spread, I think. So it had the Clone Emperor and Vader and Boba Fett and Admiral Dalla. And, you know, she was from the books. And it had Thrawn in there as well. And so I asked the Lucasfilm, you know, what did he really look like? Because he wasn't really described other than, you know, blue and dark hair. And they didn't really have a description per se. So I went and did some research, and what I used for the reference for him was a young Robert Mitchum, which I thought was very imposing look to him. So that's the reference that I used. I thought it fit the character very well, but obviously he's dead now and would be very, very old.
Right.
But that was my thought, you know, back in the mid-90s.
Yeah, I could, I could totally see that now that you mentioned that.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. So, you know, who knows? I mean, it could very well be that he may just be the name out there that they use for the next season, you know, as the imposing bad guy, and then not really do anything with him visually, just sort of, you know, be like the Emperor. We heard about the Emperor, but never really saw him per se, you know, right away. So,
do you have anybody in your mind that you would like love to see play him?
No, not really. I think they've made some really good choices on The Mandalorian for actors, you know, playing the characters mm-hmm. so far, especially translating the animated characters to live action. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that they will make a good choice when they do. So I'm not worried. I'm certainly looking forward to it when we get there.
Same here. I'm thinking a very young Anthony Hopkins.
Possibly. And the technology is there to do it. He's still alive.
Hey, he did it in Westworld.
That's true. I forget about the deep fakes and stuff like that.
Yeah, but I'd rather see someone, a new actor.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. So
Dave, what about you? What comes to mind when we bring up Star Wars?
Oh, yeah. There's a million ways to answer that question. I mean, I've lived with Star Wars, you know, most of my life. I saw the movie when I was 17 in the theater on opening day. And, you know, that influenced the way that I look at movies and the way that I look at art. And, you know, through my early career, I just loved the look of Star Wars and the mythology. And so it's been a part of my life, you know, for a long time. You know, I did Star Wars artwork when I was younger, you know, for myself. I just enjoyed the genre. And so it was, you know, sort of a very pleasant surprise to be at the right place at the right time with Dark Horse Comics to be involved in first Indiana Jones and then Star Wars with Lucasfilm. And so, you know, it's been more than 30 years since my involvement with them. So that's half my life, you know, working with Star Wars, and certainly more than half of my life having Star Wars in my life. So, I mean, that's really the first thing I think about is how good Star Wars and you know, Lucasfilm and the fans, you know, have been to me and really made me what I am. So sure. Certainly eternally grateful for that. Other than that, you know, it's a really fun universe to play in. It's great to do the artwork. It's really challenging because, you know, with me, you know, I have a set of standards, you know, set by the films. And, you know, I have to capture that in the artwork that I do because that's what the fans look forward to. And I'm a fan, so that's what I look forward to as well. So, you know, there's always excitement there, you know, through the challenge of creating new and interesting art, you know, within the Star Wars mythology. You know, that's what comes to mind first. And then you start, you know, whittling it down to all the really small, fun things that make it what it is. And, you know, it's a whole sort of envelope of life type of thing.
Sure. And it has to be pretty cool to, you know, have your stamp on something that's so, you know, obviously not obviously cherished by yourself, but, you know, the world over. One thing that I had seen online, and I'm probably jumping the gun here. This probably should be something for later in the episode, but something you just said just made me think of it. I think there was a painting you did that had like, I think it's the AT-ATs. Maybe it was on Endor, and it looked like they had been made into like logging.
Right. Yeah, I had done a painting of the Imperial base on Endor during its construction. As we see the rebels invading the Imperial base, the bunker, and then you can see the radar dish in the background and that type of thing. But my take on that was to show early in the construction. So, you know, I created a number of things in that piece that hadn't existed before, the walkers being adapted into, you know, moving, you know, construction machines, rather than trying to create something new and get it past Lucasfilm, you know, to fit within the canon. I thought it was easier to, you know, retrofit some of the existing material to fit. That way, you know, a viewer recognizes it, but says, wow, that's a pretty interesting way of you know, making it work for the story and the image. Sure. So, yeah, that was, you know, the widescreen prints, that was one of the celebration prints that I did. The widescreen prints that I've done for the celebrations have been very exciting for me because I've taken the liberty to work with Lucasfilm in creating images that tie in specifically with ideas within the film, but weren't actually shown in the film, like the sandcrawler with the Tusken Raiders and the Imperial troopers. Yes. If you know, the Gentleman Waste piece, that was something that you know, wasn't in any type of canon with Lucasfilm. There was no description of what might have happened in that incident. And so as I got to thinking about it and thinking with the quotes that Luke and Ben, you know, their dialogue and looking over the scene, and I thought, you know, maybe it would be interesting if it wasn't, you know, they say it's Tusken Raiders, but, you know, Kenobi says, well, you know, they don't travel single file. Well, you know, why couldn't it be, you know, Imperial troopers in disguise as Tusken Raiders? And right. So I ran with that, and Lucas was very happy with the concept of that and gave me approval with it. And so that, you know, that made it just really fun to be able to contribute, you know, a little bit to the mythology. And then, you know, like the Battle of Hoth, where Vader's on the
snow speeder.
So, yeah, and he's poking his lightsaber in there, feeling the force of where Luke was in the crash snow speeder, and you know, we see him actually on the battlefield, and you know, those things are just really fun, and they have been over the past few years to be able to work with Lucasfilm and create these images that you know, tie in peripherally with the story, and you can look at them in the widescreen, you know, prints and say, wow, that could very well be a scene from a movie or an edited scene from the movie, that type of thing. So that's been fun.
And it's cool how, I guess like when AT-AT I'm talking about, you know, it had claws on the front that were gripping logs, and it just really challenged my mind. Cause I thought, okay, these things can be obviously used for so much more than just, you know, implements of war. You know, not only could they be logging, but maybe on Hoth, there's one that has, you know, a plow on the front of it, or, you know, you never know, like it just really challenged your mind within that universe. I really enjoyed that.
Right. And I certainly enjoyed it. I know that the people that I worked with at Dark Horse when we were doing all those stories and Lucasfilm, you know, gave the writers and the artists the freedom to do some of those types of things, you know, that made it more exciting, you know, but Lucasfilm would put their foot down, you know, on certain things. I remember when we were working on A Crimson Empire, the Crimson Guard, the elite Crimson Guard, had these double-bladed spikes, staffs. And originally, Randy Stradley and Mike Richardson had suggested making them double-bladed lightsabers. And this would have been, 94 or 95? That was when Lucasfilm was sort of gearing up for Episode One. And so they said, nope, no double-bladed lightsabers in your comics. We're not going to allow that.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so because they were, you know, holding that on for Darth Maul. I wanted to do a print of Yoda when he was younger, jumping around, you know, just slicing up stuff with his lightsaber, you know, being the young warrior that he probably would have been, you know, prior to his 800 years being old. And, you know, this was before Episode Two. And they said, nope, no Yoda with lightsaber. And I said, okay, no problem. So, you know, they had a real good grasp on what they wanted to do, what they wanted to show. And working with the creative people at Dark Horse. So, you know, that made it even more exciting that they cared enough to follow these things and, you know, make those decisions.
Absolutely incredible. I love hearing this stuff. My God.
Yeah.
All right, Jack, let's cut over to you. Star Wars, sir.
Lately, it's been a lot about the expanded universe making its way back in a little bit here and there. Just how they... I never followed it back in the day. I always felt bad because I didn't know all the old lore and stories from back then. But now that they put the kibosh on of it when Disney bought them, and now they're bringing a little bit stuff back and forth here and there, like Thrawn, well, Boba Fett for one, and then like the Marshal from The Mandalorian, just a little small stuff like that.
Well, there's you know, a whole world of great characters and situations in the expanded universe. And, you know, I look at it two ways. When Disney bought Lucasfilm, I kind of figured that they would want to start over because now that they owned it, they wanted to make it theirs. And so I wasn't surprised at the decision to throw away the expanded universe. You know, I was asked the question, you know, quite frequently when that happened, you know, what do I think? And I think, you know, if I'm a business decision, that's probably the best decision for Disney. I mean, Lucas went with Disney, I'm sure, because he felt that Disney was probably the best place to continue building generation after generation of Star Wars fans, more so than Lucas could, you know, on his own. So I understand that from a business point of view. Creatively, I think Disney has dropped the ball completely up until until The Mandalorian.
Agreed.
I think that you know, they just didn't know what to do with it. It was very very poor management on Kathleen Kennedy's part, not having a production team, you know, create a three-part story that they could do as episodes 7, 8, and 9, you know, writing them one at a time, one after each other, so that each film had to correct or go in different directions than was within the previous film. So, you know, they just made some really bad decisions. And I think saying that the expanded universe was not canon put them in a corner. And I think it took Filoni and Favreau to come in and say, look, you know, we have this material. Let's start, you know, cherry picking some really interesting things that the fans like and want to know more of and do something with that. And you can see just in the excitement that The Mandalorian has given the fans that's the way, you know, to go. The people who know Star Wars from a mythological standpoint and a story standpoint, you know, creating and continuing the world, rather than Kathleen Kennedy, who is a producer by nature, not a creative person. And, you know, Lucas, heading Lucasfilm, you know, is a filmmaker, but he's also a creative person. Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah, there were mistakes made. And hopefully, you know, things are being set a little bit more in the proper direction now.
It cracks me up. I don't know, Dave, how much you're on social media, but I'm seeing a lot of memes and stuff on there about, you know, Jon Favreau is seriously hurt. And then you start reading this paragraph, and halfway down it says, "For carrying the weight of the Star Wars franchise on his back with the Mandalorian."
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Same thing with Filoni. I mean, he, you know, everyone was really happy with the animated shows. And so, you know, he gets the same thing and doing the live action now, saving the Star Wars universe. So, yeah, I see that all the time. And, you know, memes can be funny, but they also can be true.
Right.
And the true ones are typically the most funny.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I would have to say my pick as far as Star Wars goes would be, I guess, a piece of Disney's extended new canon would be the Darth Vader comic series, which kind of picks up right after episode 3 and, you know, shows his first, you know, first days on the other side, you know, his first days at the Emperor's side, getting his new lightsaber. Just learning what he's done and kind of accepting that you learn where like red kyber crystals came from. It was such a good book, so good.
Yeah, and you know, you have to you know, thank Lucas. What do they call it? Not Lucasfilm Books, maybe it is. They have a good staff of people working with them now, as far as the new continuity, you know, throwing away the expanded universe and working with the new Marvel continuity. They really built a good reputation with us during the Dark Horse years. And I think that they've found that was a very good way to oversee the fandom aspects of the media, books, comics, movies, keeping it all together so that the fans can come in at really any time, but then be able to investigate, you know, favorite things from you know, the past within the current canon. So I think that, you know, a lot of that has to do with Lucasfilm Books and the people that they have, you know, working there. And, you know, Marvel, I think they, you know, have had a lot of hits and misses in their series, but yeah, I think the Vader series probably has been one of the better series throughout the past couple of years, more so than when the Star Wars book was limited to only information between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, and now they're sort of handcuffed by being after the Empire Strikes Back. So I think some of the other materials is much better. And Vader, you know, is amongst those.
I had the question for so many years, like, why does it matter the color of a lightsaber? Like, why does a Sith have to have a red saber? And there was, I guess, just so much about the Sith in general I didn't understand. And that series, I mean, and maybe it's just, you know, stuff about the Sith that's new with Disney, I'm not sure, but I just thoroughly enjoyed all of it. And not only that, but, you know, his gripping with, oh, my God, have I made a mistake here? What have I done? What did I why did I try to kill Obi-Wan? You know what I mean? Should I go to him?
Right.
But then that collapse of all that. I don't know. It's so hard to explain, but it's so good. You guys should check it out if you haven't.
Yeah, there's a lot of material there. And to be honest with you, I stopped reading a lot of the stuff because there was too much coming out.
Same here.
Both in the comics and the books. So, you know, I'll read up on Wikipedia or Wookiepedia if I need to get some background. But there's a lot of information out there. And you know, it's fun. It's certainly, you know, for the hardcore fandom, they love that type of stuff. And, you know, the Lucasfilm is not afraid to, you know, put it out there for people to enjoy.
I'm glad they do. I'm certainly glad they do.
Yep.
Does anybody have any other contributions to this retro before we move on?
Just had a quick question for Dave. Sure. Did you have any involvement in the Shadows of the Empire series at all?
No, not really. I at one point was going to do a print,
okay,
in collaboration with the unrolling of the Shadows of the Empire. And there was a lot of missteps in rolling that out. And so I painted half the thing and I just sort of set it aside as the interest sort of never really snowballed for it.
Mm.
And I felt that a print wasn't needed at the time. And I still feel that it's not. I think it was an interesting story. And it came out at a time when there was no movies and just the comics and, you know, not a whole lot of other media out there. So, but I don't think it's really what the fans wanted. I mean, they enjoyed it, but it wasn't quite there yet, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
That was the only thing. I actually recently finished that painting last summer, I think.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I do a live show a couple times a week on Facebook, just painting. And I found that painting in my flat file, and I pulled it out, and it was half done. And I thought, you know, I'll just go ahead and finish it here 20 years later.
That's neat.
And yeah, so, you know, just a quick plug, if you go to Dave Dorman Artist on Facebook, I archive all of the live paintings that I do, so it should be there somewhere if you have the patience to, you know, flip through all the live painting. There's a lot of Star Wars stuff there too, but yeah, that Shadow of the Empire piece was finished finally, and I sold it to a collector, but it's never been published.
Gotcha. Yeah, just for our listeners who might not know what that is, that there was a Nintendo 64 game that was released called Shadows of the Empire, comic book series, and then a couple figurines.
They did some figures. They actually did a soundtrack. They had an orchestral soundtrack to
play. Oh, really?
With it. Yeah. There was quite a bit of associated product with it. It just wasn't the film. It was basically all the stuff that goes with the film, but no film.
right.
You know, so, I think that's really what disappointed most of the fans, is they really wanted a film, and to have everything but the film just wasn't quite it.
I understand.
But,
that.
You know, it introduced a lot of different things. It introduced the Black Sun cartel, the bad guys, and, mm-hmm. you know, Zizor, who was the head of the thing dealing with the huts and the underground. I know that one of the game companies was producing a game that was set in the underground of one of the planets. So it was all about bounty hunters and renegades and you know, ne'er-do-wells and stuff. It was a first-person shooter. I can't remember what it was. It was a number. It was like 1919 or something.
Oh, 1313.
1313, right. Yeah. And so they actually had a lot of that material that was generated through the Shadow of the Empires, you know, background material and such,
awesome.
Building that particular world. But then, you know,
they Disney the bought them and then pulled the plug.
Yeah. So that was that.
Disney do. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, hey, I mean, we're getting to see Thrawn and hopefully in Mandalorian, maybe we'll get to see Dash Rendar in there too.
Well, maybe, you know, somebody said they saw his ship in
really?
One of the prequels or one of the new sequels. Yeah. So you never know.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to see Kyle Katarn show up, you know, because I painted him for the Jedi Knight book series. And he had a very cool ship, the Moldy Crow. that I actually had a model built of because it was a really odd shape and they needed it for reference. But, you know, that was he was a fun character, too. You know, unfortunately, they retconned it. He was the one who actually got the Death Star plans and you know, got that to the Rebels. So that's sort of retconned now with Jyn Erso and Rogue One. But, you know, that was an interesting, you know, storyline, that the Jedi Knight, which was based on the Jedi Knight computer game.
Some games I gotta look into.
Right. Yeah. Heard up and well, very good, very good. So let's just shift our attention, I guess, right over to you, Dave. I'm, you know, having looked at all the artwork, I mean, not all of it, but a lot of it online, and I'm just so curious. With a talent like that, you had to have started very young. When did you start painting?
I started painting when I was about 15 or 16. I had an interest in comics from when I was very young. I loved the artwork, and that's really what got me started was just looking at you know, fun books that I was reading. And, you know, to date myself, this would have been the late 60s. You know, great Fantastic Four and Avengers and Captain sure. America and, you know, Jack Kirby and John Buscema and Steve Ditko and Jim Steranko and all these great artists. And so, you know, I actually didn't, I sort of collected comics from when I was 9 or 10, but I actually didn't read comics until I was probably 12 or 13 because I just loved the art. You know, I'd buy it just to look at the art.
Sure.
And then, you know, I started reading them and just sort of got into that, you know, collecting thing. But that was the major influence was the art and an interest in drawing from that. So that's how I learned to draw, was copying those great Jack Kirby and John Buscema Avengers and Thors and, you know, just copying those characters. And then, sure. You know, I was a fan of Frank Frazetta, who, you know, made his mark doing Conan the Barbarian paperbacks. And so, you know, I was a science fiction fantasy fan, you know, reading back then, you know, comics and books, and his artwork was very influential in my early days. But, you know, I really didn't have an interest in painting until my drawing got a little bit better, and then one day I decided, you know, I'm going to try painting, and so I you know, I just started copying, you know, Frank Frazetta paintings from covers of you know, the Conan books, you know, the same way that I copied, you know, Jack Kirby drawings from the comics. And that was when I was like 15 or 16. And it wasn't until I was, you know, a junior in high school that I really decided to, you know, put more time into it. Back, you know, then it was just a hobby, nothing that I did other than because I really enjoyed it. But sure. As you get into high school, you know, you start deciding what you want to do, and art was something I really enjoyed a lot. So I started putting more effort into it. And then, you know, by the time I graduated high school, I was looking forward to getting a scholarship in football, because we were obviously, I was playing football at the time, and we were a very good team, and I was being scouted. But I banged my knee up, and when I was a senior. And so that pretty much ruled out, you know, my football scholarship. And so, you know, really, when I banged my knee up and you know, the school said, no, we don't want you anymore, you know, about half the way through my senior year, I just decided, okay, I'll be an artist. And that's basically what I was. You know, I talked with my folks, and I had a little studio in my bedroom, and I spent all my free time just, you know, at the drawing board, drawing and painting, and, you know, letting things influence me, you know, from outside, you know, science fiction, fantasy, comics, movies, books, those type of things. And then, you know, Star Wars when I was 18, you know, seeing that, you know, boosted things. And then I started going to comic conventions and showing my artwork around and getting feedback. So between, you know, 1979 and 82, you know, I just did my best, you know, trying to you know, further my craft. And I do little jobs locally, you know, business card design and advertising drawings and things, you know, for the local community. But, you know, my heart was really set on comic books and painting. So, you know, eventually it was just hard work. And eventually it was making that first sale to Heavy Metal magazine in 1983. And then, you know, sort of building on that and building on that. And then eventually in 1989, hitting Indiana Jones and then, you know, directly into Dark Empire with Star Wars right after that.
Nice.
So, you know, this genre has always been in my life. It's something that I've enjoyed. And, you know, I've found a way to, you know, work that into my profession. And so, you know, people ask me, you know, how I like to work. And I, you know, I tell people it's the best job in the world. You know, it's very, very satisfying.
You have to be thankful for that banged up knee some days, right?
You know, yeah. And I am. I am. And as I get older and feel it a little bit more, you know, I smile a little bit bigger.
I would say so. I know I certainly would be. One thing, you know, you had kind of talked about the mid 80s there. One thing I read on your Wikipedia was that Hasbro had commissioned you to paint over 100 pieces of, I guess, realistic artwork of the G.I. Joe characters for their 3-inch figure line. Now,
right,
we're huge toy collectors on this end. And when I think of realistic G.I. Joes, I think of those explosion, you know, where the character's jumping out of the explosion that was on the backboard of each and every one of these figures.
Right.
Is that the artwork you did?
No, actually, to give you a brief description of what I was doing, I was working with the research and development department, the R&D department. And what they would do is they would design the characters within the department for whatever year that they were going to be producing, you know, that set of characters. And so they would design the characters, and then they would have an artist prepare a rendering of the character as they would look in real life.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so those paintings were for in-house use only. They were never published anywhere. They were usually used as display pieces to show the higher-ups and the board of directors in addition to the toy designs themselves. The realistic painting gave the non-creative people a better idea of what the character should look like.
Wow, and, cooler. That's even cooler than the backstory, so, because that's the birth of the character.
Yeah. So I was you know, hired to do those paintings, those sort of final production paintings, and then you know, I'd send them in, and they'd, you know, do their thing, and you know, as per my contract, they kept them. So that was really a lot of fun. But the packaging artwork was done by a couple of different artists, and they were more advertising art. They were sort of realistic, but not as realistic as I was doing with my pieces, because I didn't have to be dramatic.
Right.
You know, most of those were very dramatic, you know, with the fire coming out, or eventually it was sort of the computer, you know, graphic-y pixels explosion and things like that. So there was a different purpose for those pieces of art. But if you look on Google, if you Google my name and you know, G.I. Joe, you'll probably run into a few of those pieces. I personally published a couple of small books with that artwork, or with some of the artwork, I should say, that I've been selling to G.I. Joe fans over the years. You could find it on Google, probably fairly easy.
Do you have a particular favorite G.I. Joe you did, or one that stood out?
Not really. I would say that probably my more favorite of the pieces were the ones that were less superhero-y looking.
Okay.
You know, they looked more like actual battlefield military rather than you know, costumed, colorful villains.
Gotcha. Okay.
I wish I could give you some names, but one of the things that that usually happened when I was working with them is they would have a working name, and we would go through the process of doing the artwork and you know, the production artwork and such. Okay. And then, you know, someone in production or advertising would say, hey, that's not a dynamic enough name. Let's change it to this guy, you
gotcha.
Know, or this name. So the names that I usually worked under were different from the names that actually showed up. So a lot of fans, yeah, your fans say, hey, did you work on this character? And I say, well, I don't know unless I actually see the character.
Okay.
The name could, you know, potentially have been changed.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it was fun. I did that for about 5 years, I guess. And it was really fun working with those guys. You know, and a couple of those guys that I worked with in the R&D department went on to work in comics. Bart Sears is one of the guys, and Mark Pennington is one of the guys that have been doing comics since then. And, you know, a couple of the other guys are, you know, doing like Western art and military art. And there's a lot of talent back then.
Sure. Now, some of these concept characters you were talking about, you said they were, you could probably find some of them in a few of your books. Would one of those books be the Rolling Thunder book, The Art of Dave Dorman? Because it looked like that was kind of a career-spanning book.
Yeah. The Rolling Thunder Art of Dave Dorman book was a sort of overview of my career up until, when was it published? About 10 years ago? So it covered, you know, pretty much the early days from you know, first heavy metal cover and then some of the independent stuff. A lot of my fans don't know that I worked with Kimiko, if you know that name, doing line drawings of Robotech covers. So I did like 30 Robotech covers in sort of an anime style.
Nice!
In drawing, yeah, not painting, but just line black and white drawing. So, you know, that was some of the early stuff and some of the early paintings for Eclipse Comics, and then we get into Dark Horse, and it covers everything. It covers my gaming stuff, the Magic the Gathering material, the card art, the stuff I did for Dungeons and Dragons, and some of the movie production art, and a lot of Star Wars, a lot of Indiana Jones, a lot of Aliens, a lot of Predator, a lot of Batman. It's really a good overview of my career. Unfortunately, it was sold out. They didn't do a second printing, but you can still find it on eBay if you're looking for it. I've been talking to a couple of publishers and possibly, you know, doing semi-reprint or a new version, you know, to update things. And there's been, you know, a lot more artwork over the last 10 years. So, and there's that book only covered maybe a quarter of what I was doing, you know, during all that time. So it's a big book, you know, it's like 360 pages of dopey Dave artwork.
You could do a 10-year anniversary reprinting with new paintings in it.
Yeah, I could. And that's something that I've talked to a couple of people about. And you know, don't be surprised if that actually happens at some point.
Well, I would be excited if it did, because I would love to see this artwork. You know, just seeing the artwork from the Star Wars book, like, holy cow, like, you know what you're primed to be, you know, looking at. So, yeah, I would definitely be interested in that.
You know, Facebook is really the best place for information on that. And, you know, I post a couple of times a week with new artwork and you know, new Star Wars artwork and whatever I'm working on. So, that's the best place to find the information. If and when I decide to do it, I'll let everybody know.
Well, I hope you do, man. I hope you do. And
Thanks. We're
going to be help directing people over that way. I was able to find you on Instagram also at Dave Dorman Artist, and there's right. DaveDorman.com, and you said Facebook, of course. So all the many different places for people to check him out. I'm sorry?
Yeah, Facebook has a couple of different pages. Dave Dorman Artist. All one word is the one that I'm usually on and I do my live show on. But there's Dave Dorman's Wasted Lands, Dave Dorman's Studio, You can search them in the Facebook, but Dave Dorman Artist is the one that I'm usually on and do the live stuff. And I chat with people, you know, during the live thing and answer questions as I'm working. And,
that sounds things like fun. That. I might have to check in for that.
Yeah. I usually make an announcement sometime first thing in the morning, whether I'm going to be on or not. And usually it's around 11 or 11:30 Central Time. That I do, and you know, it's an hour and a half ish, sometimes less, sometimes more. But it's fun. It's a way to just reach out to the fans live rather than just looking at posts.
You know, it's so funny as you're sitting there naming off, you know, all these properties you've been involved with. Somebody like me that grew up, you know, the tail end of the 80s through the 90s. I mean, I had so much of your work as part of my just childhood and not even realizing it.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, that surprises a lot of people. You know, most fans know me for Star Wars or Indiana Jones. Some know me only, you know, for Aliens or Predator. Some only know me for G.I. Joe. So, yeah, it makes me feel good when someone comes up and you know, says, oh, I love your Star Wars artwork. And then they start looking at the table in front of me and see this. I say, oh, you did Batman too? Oh, cool. And, you know, they get excited. Oh, I've seen that Aliens thing. And so it's fun, you know, having that diversity and sharing it with the fans.
You've worked in a ton of amazing properties, like the properties of all properties, Alien, Batman, Star Wars,
the list all the good ones.
How can you go wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've been fortunate, you know, Star Wars really, you know, opened a big door for me. I was doing some licensed stuff before that, but certainly Star Wars opened that big door. And once, you know, like a lot of businesses, once you open a door into something that's as big as that, you know, other people will look at you a little bit more seriously. So,
right.
You know, so I was able to, you know, keep my ear, you know, to the industry. And if I heard, you know, of a fun project that, you know, was being worked on, I'd make calls and, you know, see if I can get involved, you know, or sometimes, you know, someone would see my work on you know, Aliens comics and want me to, you know, do some production work for a film or, you know, do a gaming cover or something like that. And so it all sort of spider webs out and, you know, all ties in together. But yeah, in my career, I've been very lucky to be involved in so many different and varied types of projects and subject matter.
How cool.
Well, yeah.
And again, got to be thanking the powers that be for that hurt knee, right?
Yep. You're right.
Well, Dave, this has been an absolute pleasure. I want to thank you so much for taking time to talk with us, man. Thank you for being here and, you know, tell us about your gift, man.
It's a pleasure. I always love to share. You know, this year's been sort of hard with no conventions and not getting out, you know, to see the fans. I think that's one of the things that I'm enjoying so much about the live Facebook thing is people can you know, reach me if they want. It's a little bit of a convention, you know, a couple of times a week, you know, a little Dave Con. You know, I've been fortunate and I've been very grateful to all the fans who enjoy what I've done over the years and look forward to more that I'm doing.
That's freaking awesome, man. Well, congratulations to you on all your success and thanks again, man.
Thanks for having me. You guys are great. And, you know, I'm always here if you want to talk again.
Oh, we'll definitely be taking you up on that. That's for sure. Good. Plenty to talk about. Jack, what do we have on the website, sir?
Go to cannedairpodcast.com where you can see show highlights, guest info, listen to the show, follow us on our social media, become a patron, buy some merch, see some of our YouTube videos, and if you'd like to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
And once again, don't forget to find us on Twitter at cannedairpod and on Instagram at canned_air. And that fancy little website Jack was talking about has a a link to our Patreon page that I told you about at the top of the episode. I'm not going to bore you with the details again. And if you're still here, you've got to remember what I said, right? It wasn't that long ago. It wasn't that long. It was only 55 minutes ago. Come on, people. anything else, people? Anything else I'm forgetting?
Just if you're sitting around bored on a weeknight, check our Facebook page out and see if we're playing some Jackbox, and hop in and join us.
Nice little package, and I think that's going to do it for this week. So until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
And I'm Dave Dorman.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and remember to be excellent to each other.
Puppy. Oh no!
Don't run, it'll only make things worse.
Mutt!
Remember, you never want to approach a stray dog, especially one that's foaming at the mouth. Get away from the animal as quickly as you can and tell a grown-up.
Hey.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
This has been a Canned Air production.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.